Gabayas Ophel Mutter. Like the Isser of not being Mishamesh Biyayim means you're not Mishamesh when it's light. But if the room is dark, in other words, the shades are down, the curtains are drawn, again, they're different shitas precisely what is the quantification of darkness, it does become mutter. Now, one second, though, what's interesting, though, is this is not just a question of mutter. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying it's a chiyuv, because since he's not with his wife the entire week, then if there's any eifin of tashmish that's mutter b'Shabbos, he is mechuyev to do it, and the heter would be if it's a dark head. Okay. So therefore, we don't have a raya. Essentially, what the Gemara is saying is, we don't have any proof if ocheles means eating or tashmish, because everything is consistent with either explanation. Okay. Now we have a very interesting halacha. We'll see if it's nogea today. Darish Rabbi Ula Rabba, Rabbi Ula Rabba Darshin da Piskei Benesia at the entrance of the house of the Nasi. Afal pi sha'amru ein adam zan es banav uvnaisav b'shein ketanim avol zan ketane ketanim. We are dealing now with the obligation of what we would call child support. And surprisingly, the Gemara says, a father, even though he's halachically obligated to support his wife, he is not halachically obligated to support his minor children, because they are capable in those days of working, of begging or doing work. Now, the Gemara will say elsewhere that if a man doesn't do it, that's a rishus and the like. So really we mean based and will not force him. If a person says, I want my kids to go to work. Now we'll see if this applies today in a moment. So he's mechalit. You're not mechuyev to support your children, your sons or daughters who are ketanim, but when they are ketane ketanim, when they're very young, you are chayev, and that is kama ad ben sheish. So it's amazing. The halachically enforceable obligation of child support is only until your children are six. You can't tell your 5-year-old go out and get a job. But you can tell your 6-year-old go out and get a job. Now, there are some Hasidisha Batei Din, this is quite an amazing thing, that actually apply this halacha in a divorce, in a get proceeding. Well, actually, Paskin, the husband is not mechuyev to support his wife, support his children. He's equal with his wife, whatever it is, they can figure it out. But if they're above six, there's no chiyuv. Now, Rav Meisha has a tshuva, that Rav Meisha says that the hischaivus of child support is also a function of mina kamakam. And that is, for example, if the husband were to specifically obligate himself to pay for more, he would have to do it. And a minag is ki'ilu, he was mefarish. So Rav Meisha actually says, since the minag is we do support our children, both legally but also the minag, till either they graduate college or whatever it is, Rav Meisha says that is the minag that would apply bismanezah. That's besides kailo and everything else. But there are chasidus Batei Din that go with this rule of six. And the Gemara Taka says, kid Ravasi, and this is based on a din that Ravasi said, Siyama Ravasi, Katan ben Sheish Yaitsei Bi'eruv Imai. It says that until a Katan is six, okay, so an Eruv Imai is over here, this is a Shaila of Eruvei Tuchumen, right? I want to go 2,000 Amos in a certain direction. So my house is in the middle of the country, and I want to go 3,000 Amos to the Tzofa. I can't have my house be my residence, because then I could only go 2,000 Amos. So I put an Eruv, 1,000 Amos, to the north of my house. So that allows me both to go home and to go in that 2,000 Amos in that direction. But I lose, of course, the other way. Now, so the question here is, let's say the father made an Eruv Tuchumen to the north, and the wife, the mother, made an Eruv Tuchumen to the south. So each one can go home, they can meet, but each one can only go 2,000 Amos from their Eruv. So which direction does the child go? So what Ravasi says is, if the child is under six or under, the child is considered to be connected to the mother. The mother, you know, he needs the mother, etc. And therefore, he follows the Eruv of the mother. If he's above six, he's already a self-sufficient person. He follows the Eruv of his father. So you see from Ravasi that dependency is connected to the age of six, and therefore that will apply to mizonos as well.
If the father is not obligated
to support
the child beyond the age six,
according to Yudena Gemara,
but he does.
Yes.
Can he count that as the seductive?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he could, but the Gemara has a lashon that it's considered to be a curse, meaning to say like this. The Gemara understood that a normally moral parent does not treat a child that way, so technically it can be called tzedakah, but the Gemara at the same time gives a person a curse for using tzedakah money for that. It's exactly analogous on the other end of the scale. Supporting indigent parents if a person's parents are poor. Now technically a child has no obligation to support parents because we paskin keep it of the aim is mishalav. In other words, I have to honor my parents with their money. I don't have to spend my own money and keep it of the aim. So technically the only obligation I have to support my parents is because of tzedakah. And as parents they have priority over any other tzedakah, but the Gemara says it is a curse that a child looks at his parents as a charity case, and it should certainly come out of his money. So it's mamish the same thing at the other end. Yeah. So the Gemara now brings a raya. What was it bring raya from the Mishnah? It's of a very shrewd raya. Mimai. And where do you see that very young children you must support? Mi diktani haisa meinika paichsin la mimaisa yadeha. Umosif in law on the zonoseha. It says if a woman is nursing, we expect less maisa yadayim, she has less of an obligation to earn, but we give her more mizonos. So we think in the Havamina, why are we giving her more mizonos? Because there's a baby that needs to eat, and the father is chayav to support a baby. Now, that doesn't prove six. That really doesn't prove six. But that does prove that at some age, you're mechayav to support your children. My time allowed me shim deboy lemechel ba'adu'ah. But the Gemara says, no. Maybe we're giving her more food, not because to feed the child, but simply because as a nursing mother, she's weak and she's sick, so she needs. Meaning you don't have a definite raya that there's a chiyuv to support even a young child. Udilma mishum dechaylahi. So the question is, no. If it's because of her weakness, why give a case of nursing? Just say, listen, im haisa chayla. My im haisa meinika. Okay. Udilma ha kamash malam, but maybe it mentions meinika. Once again, not because there's a chiyuv to feed the child, but because a stam meinekes is a chaylas minu. So therefore you don't have a raya. Okay. But nevertheless, even though we don't have a raya, the halacha is the halacha, that there is a chiyuv not only to feed a baby, but to feed the child up to the age of six. And Itzmar, interestingly enough, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, when we give a meinekes extra food, here we do add wine. We do put in wine in spite of all of the rules we had against not giving married women wine. Shayayin yafel l'chalav. Apparently, the ingestion of wine is good for the production of milk. Okay. Hadin l'chafopi. Now we begin the sixth parak, which continues about the different rights and responsibilities of husbands and wives. Mitzia soisha, if a woman finds a lost object, she actually finds a diamond without a simon. Maisi yada, she earns money by working. That belongs to her husband, right? That's one of the things. Assuming the husband is supporting her, that's very important. Assuming the husband is giving her mizonos, the husband does get mitzia and maisi yadaya. Now, what about Yerushasa? What if a woman inherits property? Let's say she's married and her father dies and she's the only child and she inherits property. So this is a little different. Technically, the husband does not own the inheritance. She owns the inheritance. But the inheritance is what we call nichsei maluk. Now, nichsei maluk is different than a dowry. A dowry is given to the husband and the husband agrees to financially compensate her in the event of death or divorce. And if it goes up in value, it's his gain. If it goes down in value, it's his loss. He has to pay her a fixed amount. That is called nichsei tzon barzel. That is iron cheap. And that is in the ksuva. That is in the ksuva. That is an amount that is stated in the ksuva. In the Ashkenazi ksuva, we just make up a standard amount. But technically, it does represent what is called dinidunya. That is not this. This is different. This is not in the ksuba. This is property she inherited. So here, she remains the owner of the property, but the husband is entitled to the peiros. So if, for example, it's a field, she owns the land, but the husband gets the crop. If it's money, the husband gets the interest, or the husband can invest the money in such a way that the principal, not in the stock market, that would not be appropriate because it goes down, but he invests it in a building or something that's more stable. Yerushalayim real estate, I believe, has never gone down, I think in whatever it is, 70 years. That is called, he eats the peiros, she owns the guf, and upon his death or divorce, she takes the property. But that does mean if the property is gone down, it's her problem. If the property goes up, it's her gain. So Yerusha, hu ochel peiros, he gets the peiros b'chayeha, but she owns the guf. Now, we then come to a related problem, by shasa upagama. Let's say somebody hurts her, somebody damages her, chovel. Now we know, if you're chovel b'chavero, right, if Reuven hits Shimon, bruises or injures Shimon, so Shimon is entitled to five things. Nezek, now nezek does not apply in every case. Nezek is what we would call permanent injury. So if there's a loss of limb or a permanent injury, so a person is entitled to be compensated for permanent injury. And the way permanent injury was assessed in the time of Chazal, it's not so easy to do it today, is we look at a slave market and we say, how much would this person be sold if they had a good arm? And how much less are they going to be sold if they have a bad arm? So the economic value of the arm is equal to that difference. I suppose even today we have slave markets in some parts of the world, Sudan and everything else. So it's not so clear that maybe we use that. So, now sometimes, again, it's not clear. Pagam is just another word for nezek. For some reason, when it comes to female injuries, we use the word pagam, but that's nezek. So that's nezek. Now there's also tsar, which is compensation for physical pain. Boshes, which is compensation for humiliation, if there is. There will not always be. Ripoy are medical expenses. And then there's sheves, which is lost earnings. But lost earnings is a little tricky, because the truth of the matter is, the lost earnings due to the permanent disability is already what is in nezek. That's exactly why a slave is worth less. So really, sheves is the interim lost earnings, let's say, due to hospitalization. So if, for example, a person, Rahman al-Islam, lost an arm, so the permanent diminution is nezek, but the 3 months of physical therapy, that would be sheves, right? So that's a separate thing. Now, for some reason, the Mishnah does not pick up three out of the five. The Mishnah just asks the question, if a woman is injured, who gets the boshes and who gets the nezek, the pagam? So the Tanakhama says, Shalah, it's her money. After all, she lost her arm and she suffered the humiliation. So boshes ufkam goes to her. Now, but be sure you understand this. When we say it goes to her, we mean it becomes nechse malug. It's her money, and the husband's rights will be to get the peiros on that money. That's the Tanakhama. That makes perfect sense. That chavala is just like Yerusha. It is her property subject to a nechse malug claim. On this, Rav Yehuda ben Baseira Aimer, he's mechalek. Bisman shebeseiser, if the injury is a concealed injury, meaning, let's say it's an internal injury that is significant, but that is not noticeable to the general public, lo shnei chalakim, she gets 2/3, v'lo echad, he gets 1/3. Bisman shebegaloi, lo shnei chalakim, v'lo echad. Again, now this is really drabbanim, meaning the Rishayim explained that the Oraisa, certainly it's her money, but the Rabbanim basically said that when there is a public injury, the husband suffers a certain humiliation and the like, so we divide it in a 2/3, 1/3 ratio. If it's Seser, it's 1/3 to him. If it's Galoi, it's 2/3 to him. Now, he then explains, actually this is not just him, this is even the Tanakhama. Shelo, what belongs to him, I'm sorry, this is Rav Yehuda, what belongs to him, Yinasei Miyad, goes straight to him. That's his money. Shela, what belongs to her, is Nichsei Malug. Yilotach Behem Karka, the money should be used in some income-generating investment, such as buying land, for who Ophel pays. Okay. The Gemara will explain exactly what the basis of this formula is. Now, the Gemara then says, B'chayra, what is the Reisha teaching me? That the husband gets Mitziah and Maisa Yadayim? We know that from the earlier parak, the fourth parak, by Kamash Malan. Atanina ha'av zakai bibitai. It says initially, if your daughter is a katana or a naira, the father has the zechus to marry her off with kedushin, whether it's kesef, whether it's receiving the shtar, or bia, of course, means he has the right to choose who she will have bia with. And then it says, zakai b'mitziyasa, he gets her mitziya, uvamaisi yadah, and he gets her maisi yadayim, ubafaris nidara, he could be made for her nidarim, mikabel eskita, if she's an arusa, not an asu, as long as she's an arusa, that's a naira. The father could be mikabel a get on her behalf, even if she didn't make him a shaliach. However, eino eichel peiris b'chayeha. If she somehow gets property on the condition that her father does not own it, like a mitziah, so under those circumstances, he has no zechus of peiris in her property. Now this is by a father, but then it says niseis. Once she is in a sua, the baal gets everything that the father had, plus one more thing. Yes, sir, Allah Fabal, Shu Eichel Peiris Bechaya. But the kasha is, since it says that the Baal gets one extra thing, but everything else he has exactly like the father, it already says the father gets Mitziah and Maisiya Zayin. So you know that the husband gets Mitziah and Maisiya Zayin. What is the Chiddush of our Mishnah? The answer is, you're right. The Reisha is not a Chiddush. But by Shasa Upagama Istrichalei Pilukta Rav Yudah ben Baseir of Rabbana. The whole Mishnah was stated only because we're adding a new machlokas about who gets Boshes Upagam, and that did not appear at all. So as a hakdama to the machlokas of Boshes Upagam, we preface it by saying, Mitzia, Maisia Dea, go to the husband, but we have a machlokas about Boshes Upagam. Okay. Now our Mishnah says the Mitziah goes to the husband. Now Tani Tana Kame de Rava. A Tana, now the word Tana, you also have to translate a little bit, obviously does not mean a rabbi that's in the Mishnah, because you're not going to have a Tana that is talking to Rava. But rather a Tana was a professional memorizer of Mishnayos and Brises. That basically, people didn't always have written, even after Rebbe wrote the Mishnah, many people didn't have copies, so there were people who memorized, and therefore they were like the virtual library, so to speak. So a reciter of a Mishnah and a Braisa recited in front of Rava the following. A Braisa that's not in our Mishnah. Mitziah so'isha li'atzma. The Tanakhama says a woman keeps her Mitziah. And it's only Rabbi Akiva that says labala, which means according to this Tana, our Mishnah that says Mitziah Seisha Labaila is only going like Rabbi Akiva. Okay. So Amar Lei, so Rava says, that can't be right. Meaning, your being Miyaches, the din of Mitziah Labaila, to Rabbi Akiva cannot be true, because Rabbi Akiva himself would certainly say Liasma. How do we know this? Because he makes a Kal V'chaymer. Uma Hadafa de Maisiyah Deha. He, I'm a Rabbi Akiva Liatzma, Mitziyasa Laikolshke. Okay, what is Hadafa? Maisi Yadayim are her earnings, but if you recall, Chazal quantified what her obligations are. The Mishkel, the weight of 5 saloim of thread, of spinning yarn. Now, Hadafa simply means that she earns more than that amount. She's a lawyer, she's a doctor. Now that either means she earns more because she has a higher hourly rate, or she earns more because she works more hours. Who gets the hadafa, the excess of maisa yadayim over the minimal shear? Rabbi Akiva's position is the woman gets it. Anything extra over the minimum, goes to the woman. So Rava's argument is a kal v'chomer. If even earnings, which normally the husband gets, but if she goes beyond the call of duty, they belong to her. Well, finding a lost object is certainly beyond the call of duty because she's not obligated to go around looking for diamonds in the street. So therefore, Rava's argument is that you can't possibly say Rabbi Akiva is the one that says it goes to the husband, because if Rabbi Akiva holds even the hadafa of Masa Yadayim go to the woman, kal v'chomer the Messiah, which is not connected to employment at all. Now, where do we see that Rabbi Akiva holds surplus Maisa Yadayim go to the woman and not the husband? It's none. It's based on the Mishnah Nedarim. Konem Shani Aisel Lepicha. Right, the word konem means a netter. Konem literally means it's a corrupt word that means carbon. That when I prohibit my property on you, I can say, this book or this piece of bread is a konem on you, and you're not allowed to be nenah from it. It's a netter. But I can only make a netter to asher you on something I own. I cannot make a netter, right? I can't make a netter, you cannot use your property. I can make a netter, I can't use your property, right? But I can't asher your property on you. So here, the woman makes a netter that whatever I generate, whatever money I earn, is a konem lepicha, is like a korban to your mouth. You're not allowed to get any benefit from it. Now, the Gemara asks the kasha, it's a dover shlo boli olam, it hasn't been earned yet, so technically it's my hands. In other words, I'm ushering my, you cannot get any benefit from the hands that produce this labor. So, the husband can be made for nedarim that interfere with his rights, but the Tanakhama says, eino tzarech lahavdil. The husband doesn't even have to be mefer. The neder is null and void, because since whatever income she generates belongs to the husband, for her to make a neder to asser that would be like assering something that belongs to the husband. So what belongs to the husband, he doesn't even have to be mefer, because it's not hers. What does Rabbi Akiva say? Rabbi Akiva Omer Yofer. He is well advised to be Mayfair, because even though her earnings up to the base amount belong to the husband, but Shema Tadizbalav. But if she makes more money or more product than the minimum, that technically belongs to her. Now, she might normally share it with her husband, but the netter is going to be Chal on that. So you're well advised, husband, to be Mayfair, so that you don't have to kind of be mitzamsing what you can benefit for. So all this is doing is, this is proving that Rabbi Akiva holds hadafa of Maisa Yadayim belong to the woman. Therefore, Rava says, if there is a machlokas in the Brisa, if the mitzia goes to her or to her husband, it is not Rabbi Akiva that says it goes to the husband, but we reverse it. Ella Apach, Mitzia Seisha Labala is the Tanakama, Rabbi Akiva then says the Yatsma, because we treat Mitzia like Hadafa of Maisi Yadayim. But now the Gemara says another kasha. Paha Kiyasa Ravin Amar Rav Yechanan. When Ravin came, he said in the name of Rav Yochanan, Ba'adafa Shoye Deatcha Kuliyamalo Pligi, the Baal Hada. Yeah, so now we're making a further distinction. So what is hadafa? Hadafa, again, is earnings over and above the minimum of the Mishko Heisalon. But there are two different ways that could be earned, as I alluded to before. Al Yidei Adchak is by forcing yourself to work longer hours. And then the other way is she's doing work within the same hours, but she's more efficient. So there is a chiluk here between hadafa in extra time and effort versus hadafa just in getting a higher hourly rate. And what Rubin says is, if it's hadafa which she did not extend her working hours, even Rabbi Akiva would be mitre that goes to the Baal, because essentially if it takes, let's say, 5 hours to do the yarn, so the husband gets the money for those 5 hours, even if it's more money. Ki Peligi, the machlokas is, who gets hadafa shal yidei hadchak? Tanakama Savra Labala? Even that belongs to the Baal, and that's why you don't have to be made for the neder. Rabbi Akiva Sabra Li Atzma. So now the question becomes the following. If indeed Hadafa Shelolai Deyatchak belongs to the Baal, we think Mitzia is Hadafa, well, she's just walking in the street and she finds. So you're still Shver. Because you want to say that Rabbi Akiva says the Mitzia, what's our epoch? Rabbi Akiva says the Mitzia belongs to her, just like the Hadafa belongs to her. But wait a second. Hadafa Shelo Al Yedei Atchak belongs to the husband. Even like Rabbi Akiva, Eva Zoy Mitzia should belong to the husband. So even if you make Rabbi Akiva the one that says the Mitzia belongs to her, it's still difficult. It's Hadafa Shelo Al Yedei Atchak. So on this, Rav Papa says no. Amar Rav Papa, Mitziyasa Ke Hadafa Sha'al Yedei Hadchak Dami. Fakert, Mitzia falls under the rule of Al Yedei Hadchak. Now, why is that so? And that's why Rabbi Akiva says it goes to her rather than her husband. So Rashi says the reason it's so is that Mitzios often involve a certain tircha. Now, it's not that you're looking for it, but you have to schlep it, you have to carry it, you have to take care of it. So therefore, that's considered to be beyond normal activity. Okay. Now, and therefore, Plutid Rebbe Kiva Rabbanan. Okay. Now, boy, Rav Papa. So Rav Papa now is a Shaila. Also, solo shtayim bevasachas mahu. In other words, these are different questions. What are called Ayidei Atchak? Clearly, Ayidei Atchak means if she's working extra hours. That's Ayidei Atchak. But what if, within her time frame, she's doing two jobs at the same time? And boy, Ravina, Shalaisha, Eidalib Bavasachas Mahu, is that Ayidei Atchak or not? Rashi gives you an example. Rashi says, let's say she's a very industrious woman. She hired herself out as a Shomeres Kishuyim, meaning to say she's a guard, right? She's guarding a cucumber field. But at the same time, she's weaving, spinning thread while she's guarding the cucumber field. She's also teaching girls how to sing. She's running a choir, right? So she's sitting, watching the field, spinning thread, singing, teaching girls how to sing, and mechamemes beyim v'cheika. And she's cooking eggs to sell in the market, right? So she's doing multitasking. So the question becomes, do I regard multitasking within the normal allotted hours is al yidei hadchak? Or since it's within the normal workday, it's shaloi de'atchak, and the nafkamina. Now, like the Tanakhama, that makes no difference, because either way, the husband gets it. But like Rabbi Akiva, that's very important. Because like Rabbi Akiva, al de'atchak, it goes to her, shaloi de'atchak, it goes to him, so we need to know how we characterize these malachas, and the Gemara blibes by a tekev. Okay. Okay, now we go to Baishas of Pagam. Okay. Now, the question the Gemara asks is on Rav Yehuda, because here's the issue. Rav Yehuda says that at least some of the Boshas money goes to the husband. If it was a more of a private Boshas, he gets one third. If it's a more of a public Boshas, he gets two thirds. Now, the Gemara wants to know analytically. Presumably the reason is because the husband himself suffers an embarrassment when his wife is embarrassed. Now, this suggests a new idea that if I injure one person, another person could be compensated for their embarrassment. And the Gemara says that's not really true. Boshes is linked to the person that you injured. There's no such concept that I can recover Boshes because of something that was done to him. So if that's the case, now the Gemara will come on Ishto Kagufa, but before we come to that, we're looking at husband and wife as two different people, but the husband gets some of the boshes because he suffered embarrassment. So Frekta Gemara, if you're telling me that a third party can recover humiliation for the thing that was done to somebody else, Maskef la Reva by Rav Chanan, Ela Meata, Bayish Susase Shol Chaveirei, Hachanami, the boy, remaking lay baishas. Let's say I did something humiliating to the horse. Now, we don't mean necessarily the horse got humiliated, but, you know, even your car. I defaced your car, and you're now embarrassed. Are we going to say that if I did something to your horse or something to your car, you could recover boshes? The answer is no. Boshes is only to the person who was physically injured. So the Gemara says, well, that's not the same here. Sus bar boshes? The sus is not capable of feeling embarrassed, just in kavachomer a car. And therefore, in order to recover for busha, you have to do a maisa of busha. If you don't do a maisa of busha, then even if someone's embarrassed, they don't recover. Ella, frekti gemara, rakak bebigdei shel chaveira. What if I spit on your garments? Meaning you're wearing clothes that you're wearing, right? Reuven spits on Shimon's garments. That is a maisa that embarrasses Reuven.
He intentionally. Some dumb person spits in.
No, he intentionally spit on the garment that Reuven's wearing. Now, that is a maisa that embarrasses Reuven, and yet, because there's no physical assault on Reuven, Reuven does not get boshes, because boshes is totally on a physical assault. So if so, husband and wife would be the same thing. Yeah, maybe I shamed the husband, but there was no physical assault on the husband. Maybe I do. The answer is no, Vatsanan. The Mishnah says in Bava Kama, if you intentionally spit on somebody, and the spit saliva hits him, or, these are cases of baishas, para raisha isha, a married woman whose hair is properly covered, and you or another woman, whoever it is, uncover her hair, Brishus HaRabin, which is a great humiliation, or Hever Talisa Mimena, so it's not so much a talis, but let's say someone's shirt, right? You go and you rip somebody's shirt off his back. So that is all, that is Baishas. And not only is that Baishas, but Chazal were Kaveya minimum fees, meaning normally Baishas is an individualized assessment, but for certain in Yonim, Chazal gave a standard Baishas, and the Baishas is, Chayav litin layarba me'aisus, 400 zuz, no matter what. The Amar Rav Papa, but Rav Papa said, when are you chayav 400 zuz for spitting at somebody? Laishanu el abay. That's only if the Reich actually hit the person in the face. Aval the big day, if the Reich hit the person's garment, even if he is wearing the garment, but it's not on the person himself, the halacha is potter. So the Gemara is...
Completely zero?
Yeah, zero. That's correct. There's no bite. In other words, what is the aside here? This is a very important aside. The Torah is not mechayev compensation for embarrassing somebody. I mean, let's take another example. Let's say you're malbin somebody, right? Good. You don't have a chelik in olam haba. That's very, very bad. But if I publicly humiliate somebody, he cannot sue me for baishas. Baishas, to use a legal phrase, is a parasitic item of recovery. That means when there is physical injury, so part of the compensation for the physical injury will also be the baishas. But when the baishas is not connected to a physical injury, even though there's baishas, there's no claim. And therefore, a person spits on the clothing. So certainly I embarrassed you, but there was no physical kesher to the guf. There's no chavala, no baishas. So the Gemara's kasha is like this. So analytically, husband and wife is exactly the same scenario. Yes, I humiliate the husband when I humiliate the wife. But I didn't hit the husband. I didn't touch the husband. Meaning, embarrassing the wife should be no more chamor than spitting on the clothing in which there was not a physical assault on the husband. And if there was not, now the Gemara will say, before we get to that, if there's no physical assault on the husband, you cannot recover for baishas. Yeah. Now, of course, we're not discussing.
No,
yeah.
You shayfech domin.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
So, would you say shayfech domin is a significant?
It's very significant. Of course, it's very significant. But the victim cannot go to Basin and get money. That's all we're saying. Meaning,
even there's witnesses.
Yeah, even with witnesses. Avada in Shemayim, it's a tremendously chomer avera. Obviously, it would be much to the person's advantage to pay money and not have this on his head. But al pidin, he is not mechuyev to pay money for it. So the question becomes, therefore, why should the husband get baishes? So the Gemara introduces a new chiluk here, and that is. Bebigdai lesle zilusa, ishdai isla zilusa. So this is a subtle chiluk, meaning like this. It's true that if I deface your car, your horse, and even your garment, even though you suffer a great busha, there's no claim for baishas because it was not connected to a physical chavala. But here, there was a physical chavala on somebody. Right, there was a physical chavala to the woman, and as a result, vaishas becomes compensable. Once you have that, we then pay the other people that are embarrassed as well. Now, the Gemara is going to ask, so now you're telling me, if I'm chayvel Reuven and Reuven's family gets embarrassed, is everybody going to have a vaishas claim? But the Gemara at the Havamin is now trying to say that if there's chavala with busha, then we allow the husband to come in, as opposed to the horse or the car or the garment, there has not been a chavola. So Amar Levina Luravashi. So if your new definition is, once there's chavola, we allow the husband to get, even if the husband is not the victim, bayish ani ben tayvim, if I humiliate, let's say, a poor person, let's say the poor person is... And as the Gemara says in Bava Kamma, that certain things which would be very embarrassing for a person of high station are not so embarrassing to a low station. But this is a person of low station who comes from a very chash of a family. So if I'm chayvel him, I push him, and he's embarrassed, but his family is more embarrassed, are you going to let them get baishas? We don't say that either. The islay zilusa lakulu b'nei mishpacha hachanami deboi lemeitin lu baishas tachol b'nei mishpacha. So finally, we come to the simplest answer. You're right, you're right. The only person who gets baishas is the victim of the chavala. There is no principle of third-party baishas. If somebody embarrasses my children, if somebody embarrasses my parents, they get the baishas. I don't get the baishas, even though I'm embarrassed. The one exception is that the busha of the wife is treated as partially a baishas claim of the husband, because ishtai kigufai. Hasam lav gufaya. Hacha ishtai gufei havai. Okay. Alright. So now we move to a new topic. And this is going back to the dowries, right? The dowries that families contribute, the money, the property. And in the ksuva, the husband assumes the obligation of paying for this upon death or divorce. And that is called either nidunya, dowry, or nichsei tzon, barzel, that are in the ksuva.
Yeah. Rob, does any of this change over time? Like, for example, Jewish Israeli gangsters are very sensitive to being offended.
Well, I think all gangsters don't want to be offended. I wouldn't offend it. Well, it doesn't change the time. I mean, let me point out that Bizman Hazeh. Well, we do pass it. Based on still, as Bizman said, we don't have Dine Knas. We don't have Dalad Vehei or Kefal. We do have Chavala. So Based on can pass in Chavala. But I have to check this. I believe that we don't award money for Busha, Bizman said. So, because that's considered to be low Shechiach. But this halacha would not change per se. Now, here is the idea that women bring in dowries. And it starts off like this. Haposek Mais Lachasne. I'm a shver, and I agreed, on a father-in-law, I agreed to give my son-in-law, with the marriage of my daughter, X amount of money. Umeis chasnai. And the son-in-law died, this is after erisin, before nisir. And let's say there are no children, of course, so she falls li'ibam. Now the halacha is, a yavam inherits everything that would have gone to his brother. So can the Yavam make the claim, hey, you were going to give $10,000 to my brother, you have to give $10,000 to me. So says, Omru Chachamim, Yachalu Sheyaymar, the father-in-law can say, it was understood that I was only agreeing to give my money to him and not give my money to you. Li'achicha, hayisi raitza liten. I was happy to give to your brother. Ulecha iefshi. Now you understand, if the pshat is like this, if the pshat is the son-in-law actually made nesuin and then he died, so as soon as he makes nesuin, the son-in-law is entitled to that money. So that will go to the yavam. But if the son-in-law dies before he became entitled to the money, the father-in-law can say, I never agreed to a hischaivus that would be applied to the yavam. Okay. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two. Pasko l'haknis le'elef dinar. If a woman or her father agreed to contribute 1,000 dinar towards a dowry, hu posek kenegdan chamesh esrei mana. He must add a third, meaning to say, for every 1,000 she brings in, the kesuva is 1,500. Now, the reason is, because when something is money, it has an investment potential, and therefore, from 1,000, the husband will get a good rate of return. So, to compensate her for that, you add on a third. This is a third milabar, meaning a third of the final product. Now, people ask a question, L'chaira, isn't this a simple case of interest? Isn't this a case of ribis? She brings him $1,000, and he agrees to pay her $1,500 on $1,000. Is that not interest? So the Tiferes Yisrael says a very interesting halacha. He says, something is an interest payment only if it's variable with time, because interest is compensation for a delay in payment. Now, this din of the Mishnah is not totally on duration at all. If he dies a day after the Nisuin, or he dies 50 years after Nisuin, this is the same thing. He must give 1,500 for every 1,000. This is not a time-based compensation. This is not what is called agar natar. Agar natar is compensation for delaying of payment. Now that would suggest that it's halakhically possible to have all sorts of these loan origination fees and a closing cost, all of these things, which in a sense are paying the bank extra for the loan, but since it is not a function of time or delay in payment, it would not be interest. Now again, halakha l'maisa, it's not at all pashut we paskim this way, but that would be the svara of this Mishnah. Okay, so the Reish is talking about money. If she brought in money, 1,000 dinar, he has to assume an obligation of 1,500. But now, let's say instead of money, she brings in stuff, furniture, china. So here the opposite thing occurs. Keneged hashum, against assessed property, these are items, hu posek pachos chaimesh. Now, here is the concept. The concept is like this. If she brings in $1,000 worth of china, he only has to give $800. In other words, he subtracts a fifth. Now, why is that so? Number one, on items, there's not going to be an investment. He's not going to generate extra money. And number two, there was an assumption that l'simchas chasam v'kala, property was overappraised and overvalued, right? People would boast about, oh, I'm bringing in 1,000. And Chazal knew that in the normal course of events, property was overestimated by approximately 20%. And therefore, if she brought in something that was said to be 1,000, it was really only $800. And therefore, he could take the assessment, diminish it by 20%, and that would be his obligation. So it's the opposite of money. With money, where we know how much is being brought in, the husband has to add a third, which really is a half. In other words, a third millibar. And with tangible properties, the husband has the right to devalue it by a fifth. Now, the Gemara will explain that this is true only if the appraisal was a family appraisal, meaning if it was professionally appraised, then the husband must pay dollar for dollar. But if it's a family informal appraisal, husband can assume it was overvalued by 20%. And now the Mishnah gives you an example. The Gemara will ask, why do you need an example? And it says, one second, that's what it says. Shum b'mana, v'shav b'mana, this is kind of a qualification. If the shum was said to be a mana, But in fact, it is worth a mana, meaning there's a professional appraisal. Then taka, ein lo el mana, the husband has to pay a mana, not four-fifths of that. Okay, that's parentheses. Okay. Now, shum b'mana, now we're working backwards. See, now we're looking at it from a different angle. Instead of saying, when she brings in something, what must the husband put in the ksuba, we're now working backwards. Let's say the husband already put in the ksuba, I will compensate you, I will give you 100 mana for your dowry. So if that figure is in there, she will have to bring in something that is assessed higher, because the husband would have the right to reduce it by a fifth. So therefore, if he agreed to give a mana is 100 zuz, he naisenes shloshim v'echad sela v'dinar. Okay, a mana is 100 zuz, a sela is 4 zuz. So 31 times 4 is how much? 94, right? 124 plus a dinar, which is another zuz, is 125. So if he agreed, I will pay you 100 extra, besides the ksuba, 100 zuzim. When we're divorced, she has to bring a shum that is appraised at 125, so that, minus the fifth, would be 100. Right? In other words, this is the opposite. In other words, we start off with what he wrote in the ksuba, and we then say how much she has to give that away. Similarly...
Why can't you say who wrote this in the ksuba? I mean,
she requested that he write, I will pay you 100. So when he writes 100, she has to bring in 125. Yeah. Now, ubiarameyas. Now, the Gemara will ask why another example. If in the ksuba he agreed to pay her 400 zuzim for property, he naisenes chamesh meyos. She would have to give appraised, now this is not money, money is different, but she would have to give appraised items at 500. In other words, ma sha chasan posek, whatever the chasan assumes as an obligation, hu posek pachos chamesh, he deducts a fifth from his obligation. Now, the Gemara then says on the first halacha, Tani Rabbanan, but this is the halacha that when the chasan dies and she falls liyibam, the father-in-law can say, I never agreed to pay the yavam. So the Gebraisa says, Ein tzarich loymar rishon talmid chacham b'sheni am aretz. If the chasan who died is a talmid chacham, and the yavam is an amaris, the shetach I can say, I don't want to give my money to him. But the chiddush is, afilu rishayin amaris, even if the chasan was an amaris, and the brother is a talmud chacham, so the chayra you might think it's even better, but still, that's not the guy that I pledge it to. I pledge it to my son-in-law, not to somebody else. Yacha loymar liachicha hayisi reisa lite. Okay. Now, then the Mishnah gave the example, two examples, that for every, right, the first example was, if he agreed to a mana, she has to give 31 sela and a dinar, and if he agreed to 400, she has to bring in 500. So why do you need two examples? Hainu reisha, the answer is, Tana Shuma Rabba, Uptani Shuma Zuta. It wanted to give you an example of a large dowry and a small dowry, because there are havaminas each way. Some say there's exaggeration only in large dowries because I'm trying to impress you by my wealth. A small dowry anyway, what's the purpose of exaggerating $1 to be 75 cents or whatever it is? So the Mishnah wants to teach me even in small dowries there is exaggeration. But there's another svara that goes the other way around, that rich people, when it's a big dowry, I don't have to exaggerate. When it's a small dowry, I want to build up. So it wants to give you the case in both cases. Or another answer, Tana Shuma Didei, V'Tana Shuma Dida. The chiddush of the Mishnah is that when we assume exaggerated appraisals, this is quite surprising, not only do we assume an exaggeration if the wife's family estimated, but even if the husband himself said, oh, I think this property is worth 100, We say that L'chabad the Kala, he himself is exaggerating and it's only 80. So he can say it's 100 and he only has to put in 80. B'chiyai Gavna, that's the Chiddush. Even his own Shimon. See, what time do we have? We want to, okay, we'll stop here. We'll try to catch up over again. Okay.
Where do we meet?
Huh? Yeah. No, there's no class.